You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm part of a sisterhood like no other. A piece of a puzzle I can barely comprehend. My life is someone else's experiment. My name is Alison Hendricks. It's Cassima Niehaus.
It's Rachel Duncan.
Alex Callahan.
Heather French.
Sarah Manning. And I'm one of a kind.
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your many toys. I'm not just one.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. As we talk a little Orphan Black, my name is Heather, and I am joined by my intercontinental clone caster, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hey, everybody.
I had to put the intercontinental in there because we find out in this episode that we have a Polish clone.
Well, we had, because she kind of, I don't think she survived the treatment that they had her under.
Or are you the Polish clone?
Well,
in disguise.
A, you cannot prove anything. B, if you knew, I would have to kill you. And C, I don't think there's monitor badass enough to handle me. I'm sorry. It's just, I'm watching this show and you guys, your only badass monitor blew himself up. Like, not
pretty
all
badass.
That. Long ago. So, sorry, baby. You will never learn whether or not I'm a clone. But I could tell you what this clone is thinking. Well, this possibly dead Polish clone is thinking. But my mother taught me not to swear, so I don't swear in Polish. And we're keeping this podcast PG-13, so I can't swear in English. Do you see my problem?
If you hadn't told us that you would have been swearing in Polish, you could have gone ahead and done it. Because how would we know?
You wouldn't, but my mother would know.
Does your mother listen to our podcast?
No, but she has supernatural powers that tell her when I do something I shouldn't do.
Do you know who does listen to our podcast?
Who?
At the Drew Powell, Butch from Gotham.
I know, that is so awesome.
Now, you may wonder why I'm so giddy about something in Gotham, considering how we talk about Gotham a lot of times, and why I'm talking about this in this Orphan Black podcast. This past weekend, Doreen and I went to Dallas Comic Con Fan Expo, whatever they call it. It's put on by Dallas Comic Con. And Drew Powell and Robin Lord Taylor were there. And I'm like, I've got to go up and talk to Drew because we're always tweeting about Butch and he's favorited and retweeted and replied back and we've had little conversations. So I went up to him. He is a fantabulous guy. And unfortunately, this means I think I'm leaning towards we may need to podcast on Gotham again. He might have.
I am made willing me... to make this sacrifice for Butch because Drew Powell is awesome.
Because not only did he say that he'd listened to it and he knew that you were from across the miles as well, and he didn't realize you were in Poland. But it was pretty awesome because his wife's family is from Poland, so he goes over there. So who knows, maybe you'll run into at the Drew Powell over in Poland sometime. You never know. Good happens.
We'll see.
But he also talked about how there's this conversation that we had a few months ago, which if you follow us on Twitter, you would have seen. And if you're not following us on Twitter, you should go over there right now at Sci-Fi for Chicks and follow us. It doesn't take, but just you click the little button and you follow us and you get a few little fun things in there. Like this whole thing we had between at the Drew Powell and at the Brune, Donnie, Christian Brune, about how they were both saying how they could play younger Orson Welles in an Orson Welles biopic. And so we had this whole little thing going there. And the fun thing was, is when I'm talking to Drew, he mentioned that he wasn't sure who this was, who at the Brune, you know, sometimes just from pictures or whatever, you don't necessarily see it. His wife saw it and go, oh, that's Donnie. I love him. He's on Orphan Black. So Sci-Fi for Chicks has made the connection between Gotham and Orphan Black and has connected these two actors and these two families. And I think that's pretty awesome. I'm pretty happy about
and
that.
And if they are ever in the same project, movie, TV show, theater thing, I don't know. I don't care. I'm going to die happy because they are awesome. And can you imagine the collective power of awesome if they are both on the screen, like at the same time? Oh my God.
Fabulous.
I am fangirling just thinking about it.
Fabulous. The only problem that I have is Drew Powell has come down to Dallas now. Come on, at the broom. Get your little hiney. your Chubbs Hendrix hiney on down to Dallas. We have three cons a year, February, May, and October. Come on down and feel the chicks love down here, because we would love to have some Orphan Blackness and some Donniness down here so that I can meet you and make Alex go all squee and blush and bright red. Kind of like I did when he said he listened to our podcast. I'm like, really? Face went instant red.
It was
pretty funny.
See, this is why I don't like thinking that anybody is listening, because I am not holding back on my opinions on this podcast, which I assume is part of the charm. But to actually think that people are listening is kind of, you know, gives me an anxiety.
So everybody, please tell us who you're listening, because it's always fun watching Alex get those anxiety attacks when we're podcasting. And one good way to make sure that you are listening is to go over to iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice and subscribe to us, Sci-Fi for Chicks, and let us know what you think of the podcast on our hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. Or email scififorchicks@scififorme.com.
Well,
gotta get those out.
Done. That was nice pimping. I am impressed.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, somebody's got to do it. You're not going to do it, so somebody else has got to do it. Okay, that's long enough. We need to get down to business here. We are here to talk about Orphan Black. This is our third from the end podcast. We only have two more episodes after this. I'm not happy about this. This is the thing that I do not like about Orphan Black right now, is they are going to be ending their season soon, and I'm going to be like, what do I do now? Got to figure out something else to do all summer long. I might actually have to go have a life outside of my TV or computer.
I hear what you're saying, but it's not translating well, so I don't really understand what you're intending to tell me. Like, what do you mean, a life outside of Orphan Black? Like,
I don't know.
I don't think I understand this concept. So,
yeah, and especially when you get an episode like this that was so packed full. I'm going to pre-apologize for us, because we really have no idea how to talk about this episode. It took us about 15 minutes to get to where we're at. So I'm sorry if we jump all over the place. You're just going to have to follow the blindness. We're here to talk about Season 3, Episode 8, Ruthless in Purpose and Insidious in Method. This comes from a quote. Actually, a lot of these episodes of recent times have come from a very small section of the Eisenhower speech. So it seems like this particular part of the speech must be something that really resonated with the writers. The quote is, "Progress towards these noble goals is persistently threatened by the conflict now engulfing the world. It commands our whole attention, absorbs our very beings. We face a hostile ideology, global in scope, atheistic in character, ruthless in purpose, and insidious in method. Unhappily, the danger it poses promises to be of indefinite duration." That sounds very ominous.
Yeah, and not at all happy.
We're just calling this one the one without a second copy, because Kasim and Scott didn't make a second copy.
Yeah.
Why did they not just scan it? I don't understand. Like, scan it, and then you have it, and
electronically,
yeah. Why do you actually physically go down and... Because it's actually illegal to do that, to photocopy a book. Just do it electronically. Oh, wait, I'm telling people how to do things. Never mind. Scratch that.
Yeah, scratch that. Or not.
Okay, here's the way to distract from the illegality that I just did. We're going to go to Helena's bullet points.
One day, I'll kill you all.
When Rachel makes a promise to Sarah, it comes with a hefty price. Meanwhile, Helena and Gracie work with the Hendrixes, and Donnie takes Kellerman to task. Over at Castor, Cody and Benchman scheme to track down the Castor original, and Rudy descends on Dyad for a much-needed asset. You know, actually, that summary was a lot more exciting than summaries of the past, and I think it does encompass this episode. fairly well. Fairly well. But we have no time to waste. So I think it's time for the countdown to get into the episode.
Holy doodle, here we go.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, so we're going to start this with the one part, even though this whole episode, we've had all these different storylines that have been very separate.
Yeah.
And they're now starting to converge. And Allison, who's probably been the most separate of any of the clones, is really integrating well into everything now, but she is still separate. So let's start with this Allison side here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Sound good to you?
Yeah.
So we have this whole conflict here with Allison and Donnie and Jason. Let's go ahead and start with a little bit of that chest thumping situation that we have. Christian did tweet out hashtag Donnie is a feminist because he did take Allison's last name. I'm down with that. I'm totally down with that.
Yeah.
Jason, not so much. Jason seems to be holding that over Donnie's head. And they kind of have a little knockdown. Not drag out, just a knockdown there because Donnie got knocked down a couple times. I mean, he at least stood up. But Donnie's a little upset about the kiss that Jason planted on Cosima Allison. Allison Cosima. And is wanting to make sure it doesn't happen again. So he tricks Jason into meeting him at Bubbles so they can talk it out.
Yeah, let's call it talking. Like, communication. Yeah, there's some communication going on. Not so much talking, I suppose. But, yeah. Let's face it. We all knew how this would end. Like, there was no doubt in my mind who would come out on top when it came to an actual physical confrontation. Even though Donnie still has like huge amount of my respect, because I really like how secure he is in who he is, basically, and nothing takes away from his masculinity. Even though, you know, Jason's going, oh, you're Allison's bitch, and yeah, you know, and all that stuff. I will hate seeing Donnie all beat up, because you can tell these aren't going away quickly. He's going to have a boxer's face for the next episode at least.
Helena might like that. We'll talk about that in a second. Donnie's fears are not necessarily unsubstantiated, because we had the scene not too long before that where Allison goes to tell Jason, no, don't do this. And there's a pretty intense kiss there that was not one-sided.
Mm. Yeah.
There's some leftover feelings from high school here.
I know, but you gotta wonder whether or not it's not just something, you know, not genuine feelings, because I really do feel like Allison has genuine love for Donnie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I'm pretty sure it's, in a way, idealized version of the connection they had in high school.
He's a dangerous bad boy, too. I mean, come on. He's, you know, he looks like he's a badass, and he's got the jacket, and he's got this danger about him, and he's finding her sexy, attractive. He's pursuing her a bit, and no matter how much she loves Donnie, come on, every woman at some point or another likes to be pursued a little bit.
Well, yeah.
And as you said, you know, I may be a bitch, but I'm Allison's bitch. This is Donnie saying this. And so it is something that Donnie doesn't provide. So it's a little dangerous and a little exciting. I totally believe the Hendrixes are fine. But I think Allison's just getting a rush.
I think the temptation is there. That there's no doubt about it. But I like how, even though there is this temptation, and there is this little flirting with the danger, so to speak, mm-hmm. at the same time, at no point during those scenes did I think that this would break up Allison and Donnie. Because they went through much worse. And even though Donnie will probably have a problem if the knowledge of a second kiss ever, you know, is mentioned, I'm pretty sure they're going to be okay. They might have some drama and some conflict, but that's only healthy.
Well, there might be some drama and conflict because while Jason and Allison are having this little spark, this little flame, Jason's got the hots for her and she's liking it. Donnie is not without admirers because it is now time. I love too how everybody is like, why do we take care of Helena? It's your turn. You get to take care of Crazy Pants.
Yeah.
As Donnie calls Helena is Crazy Pants. It's your turn to do all this. It's time for you guys to step up. You guys have been off doing your own thing for long enough. Time for you to be part of the Clone Club and take everybody in. Allison is very welcoming of Helena and then later Gracie, of them coming into the house. She is so secure and everything. I love it. Donnie is not so much until we have this scene with Donnie teaching Helena how to make soap.
It can get pretty thick, so you really got to put your back into it.
Sister Allison has good taste.
Yeah, well, she's very crafty.
In men.
What?
You have meat on your bones. You're strong like baby ox. This I like.
It's not usually this thick when Allie does it. So maybe we need two baby ox.
You are funny man, Donnie Hendrick.
That's very kind of you. Okay. Why don't you try, okay? Be very careful, it's hot. I'm going to talk to my wife.
Two babies.
I loved this scene. This was such a great moment for Donnie and such a cute moment for Helena and very awkward.
To watch.
Yeah, but in a beautiful way.
It was awesome, even though I was, grimacing all the way through, and it was like a train wreck. I didn't want to watch it, but I couldn't look away. And when Donnie went into the accent,
oh yeah,
I was sold. I died right there on the spot. All the awards to those two, like forever and ever.
They had so much fun. I'm sure that Christian and Tatiana had a great time doing that scene a few weeks ago when they were doing the money twerking, dance in their underwear on the bed. That must have just been hilarious there. This had to be just as funny, too, with Tatiana. Because Donnie hasn't really interacted with Helena.
Yeah.
And so to have this whole thing and have her, you're strong, little baby ox, and him, it's like he was repulsed by it, and then he was like, oh, wait, actually, I kind of like it. I'm like an ox, yeah. And he does. It was such a fun little scene. It really was. I enjoyed that thoroughly. And it was nice seeing Donnie's ego get pumped up a little bit, even if it is by Crazy Pants, Helena.
Honestly, I think that we're going to see more of that dynamic. At least that's my wish. You know, please, you know, Christmas early, I need those two again on my screen because they were awesome.
It's really nice to see Helena too being out of her scorpion box assassin clone thing.
She's so different.
It's so cute. Her with her babies, her playing with Gemma, that was awesome. Like, Donnie's worried about Helena being around kids. Everybody across the board is like, Helena's great with kids, and Gemma was having such fun with her auntie Helena, and it was such a sweet little scene. And then watching Helena come down in Allison's clothes.
Thank you, Sestra Allison. Oh, such beautiful clothes.
See, she fits right in.
Looks good, doesn't she, Donnie?
Yeah.
It's that's nice, because I think Helena really does feel this familyness across the board, and knowing that it is not just the Sarah Kira family. It's not just Sarah Kira and Fee by extension. It really is. She's taken that in after that scene. Was it last week? 2 weeks ago. Last week, when Mrs. S gives her this big hug, you know, your family, and brings her in.
Yeah.
Helena really does feel that. And it's so cute.
It is. It's like a huge weight fell off her shoulders. Did you notice it? She was lighter. Mm-hmm. She was more prone to smiling and not so stressed, you know, not wound up in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And it was so refreshing and so good to see her like that.
When she sees Gracie, because Gracie is now a part of this as well, and comes in, and Gracie apologizes, and Helena's like, it's not you, and is saying, you know, you will be an aunt to my babies. And Gracie likes this and is accepting of it, and seeing them come together like this, I think it's a really positive thing too, because a lot of times women are portrayed very catty.
Yeah.
And when they're fighting over something, either a man, or fighting over what a man did or something else there, they turn on each other. And Helena is really showing that she can separate this out, that she's a strong female character. She may be crazy pants, but she's being very strong in that she realizes everything that happened with Gracie and all that. It wasn't anything she needs to be holding against Gracie. It wasn't Gracie's fault. It was other people, so they can have this bond. And I think that was a really subtly important and poignant moment. It was very subtle. It wasn't in your face, hey, feminist moment, but it was definitely there. I felt it.
Oh, yeah. And we see it so rarely on TV that when we do see it, we take notice. Because it's, this is the kind of show that I liked, that I want to watch, and not when I'm watching Orphan Black. Like, I would love to see dynamics like this everywhere. Because you can't deny that the dynamic between Helena and Gracie is a complex and difficult one. Because there's so much going on from the last season. And yet to see them, in a way, overcome this and manage not to tear each other down. I know that it would be difficult for Gracie, because she's just barely out of her childhood. But it would be so easy to write it with more hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And instead you got this little quiet hug. And honestly, I wanted to join in on the hug. Like, group hug everybody. You two deserve it.
Well, and with everything that they've been through, I mean, here's Gracie apologizing for losing Helena's baby. I'm like, you were impregnated with an embryo that is part Helena's and was part your father's. And your father did this to you. And you're apologizing to her? It was a great moment, role model moment, that you would never expect Helena to be the role model for how to be a mature adult. But she just gave Gracie this really great lesson of what, you know, the complicated situations, what it actually boils down to. It was a really, really nice moment. And Gracie's one of those characters that I've liked but not really liked, or she's been there, she's bothered me. This was a moment when it felt right. It felt like her character is ready to start really blossoming and growing.
Yeah.
And get out from underneath this shadow that she's been under this entire time, ever since we first saw her. There's been this shadow over her, of whether it's her father or what her father's doing or what the Prolethians are or anything. She's been under the shadow. I think she's finally going to be able to blossom into her own character. And like I said, it started with like S and Sarah and all that. And Mark too. Let's give Mark a little kudos, because we don't call Mark a caster. He is Mark, because he's proven himself to be Mark. But I think Helena is the one that's really going to pull her into the light. And I think that's beautiful.
I'm honestly looking forward to that. Maybe we're not going to see that final transformation, so to speak. this season, but hopefully the actress is going to stay on and we're going to see more of her growing up, basically.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see more of her, and for her to have a little bit, her and Helena both, to have a little more luck in their lives. But somebody who does not have a lot of luck in their life, and who I want to see more of, but I don't know if I want to see more of because it does not bode well, is our unlucky Lita clone number 13. Now, she's number 13 in, she's the 13th one that we actually have a name and a face and see something of, whether it's a picture or video or action. Looking at this, I think we actually have 20 clones, if we count the Polish clone in there. 20 Lita clones, but our unlucky number 13 Lita clone is Crystal, who we get to fully meet, not just on video, like we did earlier in the season, but we actually get to meet her, and I just wanted to go and get a mani-pedi, because she just seemed, even with all the tragedy that she's trying to convey to people, I'm like, you would be fun to go have a mani-pedi with.
I feel like what I do is quite healing. I don't know if you feel that right now, but that's just my gift. And I just feel like, you know, in spite of everything, as hard as it is losing Hector, you can't crush the human spirit.
I did get a mani when I saw, because hers was the very first scene of the episode, when she was doing Delphine's nails. And I saw her.
Right.
And I paused the episode and I went and got my pink nail polish. Two shades of them, by the way. Pale pink and coral. And I decided, yeah, I'm going to make, do my nails. And they're going to be pink because I'm seeing Crystal and I do not have a good feeling about it. And so I continued to watch the episode while doing my nails. And if you follow Sci-Fi for Chicks, you probably already saw my mani on it because I posted it.
And we'd like to see your mani in honor of Crystal, our newest Lita clone. So hashtag show us your mani. Let's get some pictures of our manis and mani-pedis and get them up on there. And show Tatiana that we have some love for this new clone. I actually really do. I really like her. She's sweet and really nice. I mean, here she's talking to Delphine. She's just spilling her guts, which we find out later. She says because she doesn't really have anybody to talk to, so she's talking to everybody. But she tells Delphine this whole thing and talking about how they were twins and how twins are so creepy and talking about Hector, who we find out later was her monitor.
Yeah.
Because she talks about how her boyfriends are like in 2-year stints and something happens and almost 2 years to the day they leave. And then Hector, which we get all these boyfriends were monitors throughout all of this time. Hector was the one that was killed by our caster clones. She, even with all that that's happened, she says you can't crush the human spirit. You mean she's still trying to be optimistic and I don't know. There's, again, this is one of those things I hate because it's all Tatiana in all of these, but I'm looking into Crystal's face and I just have such empathy for her and she's just pulling me right in and I'm listening to her story and I want to be there and interact with her in a way that I wouldn't with some of the other Lita clones. Not that I don't love them, but there's something about how she's portraying Crystal that I love. And the fact that we start with her being kind of this dumb blonde, but we find out she isn't a dumb blonde. You know, how they were able to do a new complexity and a new twist on a new clone, it just amazes me. I love it.
I watched this episode and it's been several hours because that's how I watch it right before we record. But it's been some time since I watched it, and I still can't believe that they managed to create a character with so many layers to her in one episode. Because, like you said, we start this, you know, dumb stereotype, you know, of a blonde who does nails and is cheerful.
The bra's showing.
Yeah, and all that. And then when Fee goes in and to steal her wallet, which we'll talk about later, when he finds out that she's been writing it all down in this little notebook and trying to make, you know, to connect the dots and trying to investigate basically what happened to her, because she sees how weird that was, that what happened to her, and she sees the problems with that storyline of two twins trying to put her in a van, and hotel security carrying, you know, serious guns and weapons that they shouldn't be carrying because they're hotel security. So, and there are things that don't fit, and she sees them. But like with many characters on many other shows that we watch, she's missing vital information that would allow her to connect the dots.
What I think was interesting about this whole sequence here, which we start with Sarah and Fee because of what they need to do for Rachel, which we're going to get to in a second here. We say that a lot on the show. We're going to get to that in just a second. We'll be there. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But they, Sarah and Fee, go to steal Crystal's identity, you know, like you were talking about. And we start very much, this is what we need. This is what we have to do because we have to do this. And Sarah, even in the car, is saying, no more in Clone Club. We're just going in. We're getting her wallet. We're getting out. We need to steal her identity. And that's it. Nobody else in the Clone Club.
Yeah.
And you see Fee go in and putting on a voice. He puts on an accent, which I think is funny because it's Jordan's real voice.
I know.
That he finally gets to use. But we have this great scene between Fee and Crystal with Sarah talking in his ear. And watching Fee, this is what I love with Crystal. Like I said, this is why I think she's a really intriguing clone that I would love to go talk with. As she's talking with Fee, as he's trying to probe her for getting what passwords things, you know, what was your porn name, your pet's name and your mother's maiden name kind of thing. And all the, you know, trying to find out all these little things. He's already feeling guilty, I think, for doing this to another clone. And for, I think, Sarah saying no more in the Clone Club. Crystal opens up to him.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
Yeah? You sure?
I don't know. Do you ever just feel like something's not right?
Like, I'm not super smart, but I'm not super stupid either.
What do you mean?
Like, my boyfriends are on a 2-year rotation. Like, before Hector, there was Craig, like, 2 years to the day he leaves for Alaska. And, like, why do hotel security guards have submachine guns? Like, why did the cops just drop the whole thing so quickly?
I just feel like I'm missing something really big.
Listen, honey.
Felix, don't.
I have to.
No, you don't.
You have to what?
I have to.
V?
Don't tell her.
I have to use the restroom.
Oh.
I'm gonna be,
okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay, I keep.
Hands up.
Yeah.
Good, just get her wallet and get out.
Oh, I hate this, Sarah.
And it just, he opens up and he just can't help it anymore. And he's like, forget it, Sarah. I can't do this. I can't leave her in the dark. And he goes into his real Fee voice.
It's
and
my
starts
truth.
Talking to her.
It's my truth voice.
It's my truth voice. That moment was just so beautiful. I think seeing that Fee, this compassion side of Fee that we know is there.
Yeah.
But is usually dragged out of him. This is one where he just can't help it anymore because he sees what this girl has been going through.
Ready for your petty?
Crystal, I am so sorry. I've got a bolt. I just forgot that I've got
okay,
this.
Okay, I talked too much.
No, I did.
I just, everything's kind of like on the front of my brain right now. Just like used to trust people and now I feel like I have to be paranoid.
Oh, Crystal. Look, darling, there's only one thing you need to know.
What happened to your voice?
Nothing. This is my truth voice. The only thing that you need to know is that you are one of a kind. You're a survivor, Crystal. And you're not alone.
the most completely beautiful thing anyone's ever said to me, like, ever.
The pain and the agony of she doesn't know, and like you were saying, she doesn't have all those puzzle pieces to put together and doesn't know what to do next, and she probably feels like she's going crazy a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, something's not right, and he's just breaking that he just wants to let her in, and Sarah's like, nope, 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 can't do that. It was just a great scene. And then for him, like you said, to find, when he does go back there and finds her, gets her wallet, and then sees that journal that she's keeping, which I find it funny that a Leda clone is keeping a journal on a Caster clone.
Yeah.
One, the Casters are keeping journals on
everybody
these other
else,
women.
Yeah.
This is a great scene because you know that she's coming back. She's going to become important because she's going to have information that they're going to need. There's something that she's got on all this investigation. She had a lot of information in that journal.
I know.
She's not a dumb bunny. She is not a dumb bunny.
I really hope that she's coming back. What happened to her at the end is not the end of her.
It's amazing how she comes in this one episode, and by the end, I am like, don't hurt her. Do not hurt her.
Mm.
Do not do anything. I'm already feeling protective of her because we've seen so much vulnerability and yet hope. It's like she's got this hope about her, and she's already made a connection with Felix, and I don't want her hurt, and I want her back. And this is really her first episode. I didn't care about her from earlier. When she was Crystal on the video,
yeah,
surveillance video. Oh, well, we have another Leda clone. Whatever. Do not hurt her.
But that just speaks to how well written she was this episode. Because anything
else. And acted.
Yeah, and acted. Anything else and we would just move on. Remember the way we talked about Jennifer, who we met only through videos? We talked about her, sure, but in relation to Cosima and what it does to Cosima. And that was all, you know? We never mentioned Jennifer again, unless it was to name all the clones. But here, Crystal, I'm pretty sure we're going to miss her, and we're going to remember her, and we're going to talk about her some more.
Okay, well, a little shout-out to Jennifer. I do believe I did pick her as my clone queen for that week, partially because she'd never have the opportunity again. So she did make an impact, but... Yeah, this just again goes to me to show how incredibly robbed Tatiana is when it comes to awards. People are not seeing this. More people need to be watching this to realize that when she gets us so much empathy for these characters and makes them so totally different. Another quick diversion, back at Comic-Con, I met, Doreen has a friend that she works with who's also a really great artist, Mike Champion. And he's actually had one of his pictures of Jon Snow and Ghost accepted for the Game of Thrones compendium.
Uh-huh. Ooh, nice.
Pretty. So he was talking about some other different ones, and he really likes doing more of the medieval type, you know, Game of Thrones fantasy type drawings. I told him, I said, you need to watch Orphan Black, and you need to think about that one, because he captures facial expressions and these little, like, he got Jon Snow's jaw clenching down perfect, where it was perfect. I said, you need to watch Orphan Black, because I would love to see how he could represent each one of these different clones. You know, you have the same face, but how they're all so different. He was actually intrigued, so, you know, go find Mike Champion and encourage him to do some Orphan Black art. I would love to see how he captures the spirit of each one of these different Tatianas. It's just incredible. Sorry, I made a diversion, but I just remembered that. It was such a beautiful idea. Have all of these Tatianas on the wall there. Poor Crystal.
Yeah.
Poor Crystal. She is caught in a web that she does not even know exists. She just thinks it was two freaky guys and security people and her boyfriend got killed and she's fine. She knows nothing about, like, one of her clients, Delphine, who is checking her out, getting the manicure, her best manicure that she thinks she's ever received. Delphine was talking with Dr., was it Neeland, I think it was, or something like that?
Something like that,
The new doctor. Our very cold and calculating doctor. He's there just for the science and doesn't care anything else. let's talk about Delphine real quick as we're getting into this. Is Delphine blinded? Is she being run too much by emotions? Is her Frenchness taking over? I mean, she says that she's just there to protect them. And, you know, she's doing all this, but we see, I don't know, part of me is, I keep vacillating back and forth with her that she's being too emotional and doing things because of her love for Cosima, and other ways where she's actually being very rational and they really should be listening to her. This whole episode seemed to be this Delphine back and forth. Should we trust her? Should we not? I don't...
Delphine. I'm hesitant to trust Delphine anymore because it feels to me with every episode that we see her that she enjoys that power that she has a little too much.
Yeah, she does.
And maybe she still thinks she's doing it for Cosima, for the Leda clones, to save them, or, you know, to cure them and all that. But she likes being Rachel far too much.
Mm-hmm.
Either she's very good at pretending, or she just embraced the dark side a little too much. So I'm really hesitant, and, you know, through this entire episode, when every time the question of trusting Delphine came up, I was voting no.
But in the end, I'm wondering if they should have. Oh, see, there's a really great way that they've made this complexity, that they've made Delphine the new Rachel, literally.
Yeah.
And I'm begrudgingly saying, maybe you guys should have trusted her. Again, kudos to this actress, because she's really turned it on. I mean, there's those moments, you know, that she's upset. She still loves Cosima. We saw this great kiss. But, and her saying, you know, well, I'm French. We enjoy lovers. I'm here because I need to talk to you about the sequencing and the proteins and blah, 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 blah. But yeah, you see this hotheadedness in there. She's really complex. And I think that's interesting because in the first season, and even into the second season, I think she was pretty much under somebody's thumb. And so she was this good girl that had, you know, she always had to, was scared about what was going to happen. And I'm only here for Cosima. Now that she's not just there for Cosima, but she still loves Cosima, she's like that absolute power kind of thing. It's like it's corrupting her, but I don't know. She's intriguing to me.
She is. I mean, we've already said that at the very beginning of the season. Season 1 and 2, she was a lovesick puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And I found nothing enjoyable about her other than her relationship with Cosima. But this season, I mean, when people talk about complex female characters, they are talking about Delphine. Because nothing's obvious when it comes to Delphine. And look at us. We are wondering whether or not she should be trusted. And even though we know she still loves Cosima and all that, but still, it's like, I know she loves Cosima, but it doesn't influence the way she basically fires Cosima at the end of the episode. I don't know how long that's going to last, but it's just... Delphine is so amazing.
She's this really great combination of this rational and this emotional and
yeah.
Irrational and cold. And, you know, it's just, she's really got these complex things. She's constantly turning on a dime. I mean, we even have Cosima and Sarah talking together at the beginning, which was a sweet moment to see.
Mm.
Again, them connecting, doing this video chat. And, oh, hey, where are you? At a friend's a friend, huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like cute little talk there. We had the mention again of Beth, which I really liked, that they're all really feeling Beth and that Sarah is still feeling this loss of Beth, even though she never really met Beth.
Yeah. And
I can't lose another one of us, which I think is why she didn't want anybody else in the Clone Club. The more people that are in the Clone Club, the more people can leave the Clone Club, you know, and that you could lose. But you see how this Delphine dynamic is affecting even in this, because she's talking about the proteins and how the protein sequencing that Delphine's telling her about that's causing her to be sick, Sarah doesn't have, and that's why it was Cody injected her with this, and everything that they've got to do, Cosima finally opens up about the book to Sarah, but hey, let's still keep this from Delphine, so we've been holding back. I like that Sarah wasn't upset about that. Yeah. It wasn't like, how dare you, but we get thrown now into this where Cosima is now trusting everybody but Delphine. How much of that, of Cosima not trusting Delphine, is just her being hurt?
I think the problem here is that Delphine was either too good at pretending to be the new Rachel, or embraced it too obviously, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Cosima could see more hesitation, if we could see more hesitation on Delphine's part, some outside struggle, then I suppose everybody would be more willing to trust Delphine, because she would be still part of the Clone Club. But now she is just too good at being Rachel to be trusted. And because she's the new Rachel, and Rachel herself shows more weaknesses, they are more willing to trust Rachel over Delphine. I don't know where that will take them, but I know I want to be along for the ride.
What I think is interesting with Delphine and Cosima is that everybody sees it. I mean, we even have Scott saying that it's all drama between Delphine and Cosima. Everybody sees this, that this is just this high drama. Even when she brings Shay into the lab and Shay gets to meet Scott, and which I just love anybody meeting Scott, because he's just such a cute little fun little geek.
I know.
Shay goes to pick up the book, and even before the end or the previews for next week and the end of this episode, I wrote down, Shay picks up book! !! Oops! !! That, for me, was this big flag where, again, these little hints of, is Shay everything she's showing Cosima, or is Delphine actually right in her wariness? Is some of it because of her jealousies? Or is it really justified? And how much good are both Shay and Delphine bringing to Cosima's life? And how much ill are they bringing to Cosima's life? Cosima is just way too trusting.
Yeah, but you know way how too much trusting. I love Shay, and how much I didn't want her
to be
anyone connected to the Clone Club. But the moment they started to name people who knew about the book and didn't say Shay, even though she picked it up and opened it. And it's not like Duncan's code is so, conspicuous. I knew that once they didn't mention Shay, it was her. It just, all the doubt vanished, and I knew that the inside man, quote unquote, that Cody and the other guy we're talking about,
was doctor,
whatever, the other guy I don't care about,
the doctor,
I knew that it was Shay, and I was both devastated and excited, and that's only how I feel on Orphan Black, because they are doing their stuff so well.
Beautifully devastated.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a nice phrase. Yeah, I was that. What she said.
It was really interesting because we get to see Cosima with both of these women. I mean, hey, we had this great kiss between her and Delphine, bringing back Cosima breaking down after she had talked to Shay about the whole near death thing, and Shay saying, I think who you see is, or what you see is your true love, and so Cosima actually opens up to Delphine. what brought me back was you. I came back for you. Oh, heartbreaking moment. Tears coming down the face.
I know.
You know, Delphine, I came back for you. And then she does the kiss, and it's such a, it was such a great moment where you're like, oh, this is like old times. Wait a second. This is the new Delphine.
In 3, 2, 1, and go.
The day you left for Frankfurt, I almost died. Some kind of near-death experience. And it was so easy, I could have just slipped away. Then I had a vision of you. I came back for you. Why didn't you tell me? Because you don't believe stuff like that. Because we have to move on.
It was heartbreaking and scary and all sorts of things all in one, because they're both manipulating each other so well. I mean, Cassim is using this as the time.
As a distraction.
As a distraction to break out Rachel. But she's still feeling everything. She's still going through everything, which Cassim getting too emotional, she does block out those things, like blocking out that she saw Shay pick up the book and Scott and all that. We have Scott telling them that the book and Rachel and how she's the one that can do this. And they now need Rachel. Rachel is no longer just this whatever. Great. We put a pencil in her eye. She's no longer just pirate clone. We need her because she can break this code. And she translates that one passage about the Castor one. So it gets them thinking. Which I don't know. I mean, she could have just made that up. I mean, how do they know what the translation actually is? But now they need Rachel, which is why they go steal Crystal's ID to try and get her out of the country. How did you like that when she said she just wanted to go to Taiwan and live a quiet life?
Yeah.
I'm like, really, people?
I did not buy this for a moment, and I was surprised when everybody else did. I was like, really? Really? Did you meet Rachel yesterday? What is wrong with you? But then, you know, what else can you think? The fact that Rachel's recovering and is still having trouble expressing herself and is, you know, riding around on this really slow wheelchair, I think it makes...
This is top speed.
Yeah. I think this makes everybody underestimate her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, easily.
And I was like, darling, underestimating Rachel is never a good idea. If you assume that Rachel can move mountains and, you know, defeat armies of evil people all by herself, then maybe you have a chance of surviving and beating Rachel. And that's what I've learned this entire last season. And they are still underestimating her. Because what, she has trouble saying words? What is wrong with you?
She can still plot. I love actually seeing, I think Rachel's at a great point where she is still able to now, not still able, but now she's able to interact more, and even though she still has this aphasia, she's still able to say things with a command. Watching her and Delphine together, when Delphine thinks she has the upper hand because, you know, you're incapacitated or whatever, for however much Delphine is being this on this absolute power trip, it's like, Delphine, you don't have absolute power. She still has power. I mean, Delphine thinks that she's got the upper hand and is manipulating these different pieces, which we find out Delphine was manipulating our clone club even while Delphine's being manipulated.
Yeah.
And into thinking things, you know, because they try and break Rachel out, and Rachel has this seizure, which looked, oh my gosh, she's got this seizure. At which we find out, yeah, probably not. Delphine is all upset now because she was the last one that could do this code in my book. It's my book. It's my book that we've got to decode. She's the last one that could do it. Now, come on. If they can break the Enigma machine, come on, just get Benedict Cumberbatch in there. I'm sure he could break the code. I'm sure we could figure something out. But
to be perfectly honest, they have the Rosetta Stone now with the first page. All they need is a copy of a book. Because now they can translate at least those parts that that are similar to what Rachel already translated. So, hello, just get a copy of the book. Unfortunately, they don't have a second copy.
Yes, as referenced in our title. Always make a backup of your backup. Backup redundancies. We want redundancies. Because of all of this, because of, you know, Lita or the Clone Club thinks that they have the upper hand, and then they're outed, and Delphine thinks she's got the upper hand, and then she's in this bad point. Yeah, this is when Cosima steps in and resigns. And resignation is accepted.
And so is Scott's. And our dynamic science duo is unemployed.
I thought it was funny that Scott's like, I didn't resign. I didn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't part of that. Scott, you make me laugh. You make me laugh.
I honestly enjoyed seeing Delphine, you know, because you gotta, it was such an obvious punishment. And this was Delphine lashing out because she lost Rachel. She lost the only person who can translate the coded sequences and probably save everything. She thought she lost Rachel, and so she lashed out. Which is why that moment made me think that, yeah, she embraced that power a little too, well, you know, too much, Delphine, because, like we said, she still loves Cosima, but it didn't stop her from lashing out. And it was such a powerful moment, and I can't wait to see the results, the repercussions of this moment.
Those moments when they did get Rachel out, thanks in part to the Battle Bitches, and they're having Rachel start translating, you know, make it worth it that we did this to Crystal, that we've stolen her ID.
Yeah.
And she starts translating it. The original has a number, and she puts a number down there. And I don't know that they, when Dr. What's-His-Name breaks in with all of his peoples and things, when all the bad guys break in to take Rachel, I don't know that that paper got taken with him. I'm thinking
Fee
number...
No, Fee was holding it. Fee was holding it afterwards.
Yeah. So I'm like, so we have that number of the original. I like that little... That little tie. I did like that tie. Something I did not like, I have to go back, because I did mention the Battle Bitches and such.
Yeah.
I did not like that when we did see Rudy to come get the book, that he was threatening Denise the kitty.
You have a very extensive sci-fi collection, Scott.
Thank you.
You think I could borrow a good book?
Please, Denise has feline asthma.
Oh, well, I was going to call on your friend Cosima, but I hear she's not doing well either. You think I'd like Asimov?
Probably. Classic.
A little too heady, is that what you're telling me?
No, go ahead, take it. Take the Foundation trilogy.
Well, there is one title in particular that I'm interested in. A very special edition of H.G. Wells, The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Do not threaten the cat. That was a beautiful kitty that Scott has. He threatened the kitty.
I know. The kitty survived. So at least there's that, right?
Yes. It was another one of those scenes, though, because he was, you know, looking at Asimov, and he wants this particular book by Moreau, about Moreau. H.G. Wells. Yeah, that was another one that I'm like, oh, I'm starting to think Shay has something to do with it. It was just not good. It was nice to see Cosima being a good friend to Scott, though. That it's okay, because your cat's okay. That's what matters.
Yeah.
I'm liking Cosima all the more. We've lost Rachel. We've lost our entire way of breaking this whole thing, but the cat's okay.
The cat is okay. People have their priorities. Even though I really loved that exchange on the couch. We should have... Why didn't we make a second copy? And then Cosima. Yeah. Amateur hour.
Yeah.
Oh, you two are adorable. And now you're unemployed together. So you can have your own entire show of being adorable together.
Are we ready for the end? The very end?
We can't really push it back anymore. So yeah. I say...
I mean, we've already got everybody universally saying what kind of monster threatens a cat. I already have an aversion to the name Rudy as it is, but I agree even more so. And you know, the battle bitches can be on my side anytime. Anytime.
Definitely.
But I think our diagnosis of the doctor from quite a while ago, that he's just out for science sake and he doesn't care what side he's on as long as he gets to do his science. I still kind of believe that. But having seen that Cody did make it out, of course we knew Cody was going to, because we have to have a baddie. And since Topside and Dyad are still kind of back into this nebulous state, it's easiest to have the whole caster military thing be the baddie in all of this. We did see our waitress, cafe owner, whatever, again. That was a nice little moment.
And she remained badass.
She's with the Clone Club, so that was a nice little shout out there. No habla inglés. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Where we see that it really is this massive military thing, because we saw the Arlington guy along with Cody. We see the doctor we don't see him get Crystal, but we see him come to Crystal and scare the pants off of her. And we have at the end, where the doctor and Cody are talking about things. We think that Rachel has had this seizure, and who knows if she'll come back and be out of it, but we find out that it's not Rachel that everybody's going to see. Delphine's not going to see Rachel in this induced coma. This is not who they're going to get to, because that's actually our poor unlucky Lita clone, number 13, Crystal. Because Rachel's off somewhere. We've had a bait and switch here. The doctor is working with Cody. So we now have somebody in Dyad that's working with Castor. This does not bode well for our leaders.
The only thing that I can say when thinking about this recent development is the plot thickens. The only problem with this is that we only have two more episodes. And I don't know how much of a twist I can take this far in the game, because come on, it's going to be a twist after big development after big scene and intensity, and I don't think we're going to have a moment to breathe at any point in time, because Orphan Black does not do breaks in their final episodes. So this episode was intense, and is going to get even worse as we get closer to the finale. So
we are going to have about a 6 to 8 hour break for our Clone Club, because in London town, Mrs. S puts together that maybe we need to go to London. Are we going home? So they get to go on a little, not a road trip, because that's not doing a road trip across the Atlantic, but they're flying from my continent to yours now.
Yeah. And hello, it's going to be fun. Finally, Orphan Black is going to be in my time zone. Well, not necessarily in my time zone, because GMT closer. Is kind of...
on your continent.
Yeah, but it's going to be closer. Like, it's going to be day when it's my day. So that counts for something.
We'll talk about Intercontinental. So they're going back home there. And looking at the previews for next week, in addition to seeing in there that Shay is in military garb there, rut-row, we get to see Mrs. S having a little fun singing up on stage. She's letting her hair down. Literally and figuratively. I love it. It's going to be so much fun.
When I saw the preview, I was like, what? No. Because the first thing, I heard her, right? And I was, am I hearing what I think I'm hearing? No. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, yes. And I got so excited.
It's going to be really fun. It'll be interesting, too, to see the three of them on their home turf, basically.
Yeah.
You know, this is back to their home. They've, even though they've been Americanized, you know, North American, you know, they've been over here, they've lived here, they know this. That was the home of Cosima and Allison and all these other clones.
I know,
Beth and all this. They're now going to be on their home turf. And I think it'll be interesting because I think actually the biggest challenge is going to be to make sure that you get the different feel of a totally different country.
Mm.
Not a different country, US, Canada. Totally different kind of feel.
Different mentality,
Yeah, and every the way things work, and even though it'll be similar, it's still going to be very different. So I'm looking forward to seeing them, Fee and Sarah and Mrs. S over there, and wondering if everybody going to go? Are we all going to go on some kind of road trip? Or are we going to have some that are going to stay behind and it's just the three of them that go? But whatever way it works out, I think it'll be a fun twist.
Yeah.
For episode 9, because that's what we're going to be on, is episode 9, Insolvent Phantom of Tomorrow. Talk about a mouthful title there.
It's going to be awesome.
But we can't move on to episode 9 until we finish with episode 8, which means we need to pick our clone queen.
3 cheers for Her Majesty the Queen! Hip hip! Hip hip! Hip hip!
Who is your clone queen for this week?
Well, like you have to ask, is there any doubt anywhere that I wouldn't pick out Crystal? Come on! Crystal gets the crown from me because it's not every day that I fell in love with a character who I just met. It takes a while for me. Unless, of course, it's Fee. But Crystal, my heart, my little black heart goes out to her. And I just know that whether or not we see her again, it's not going to be pleasant. So, yeah. Honey, you need all the warm, fuzzy feelings that you can get. So, you're my clone queen. So, there's that. What about you?
She would be my clone princess because I did really like her. But I think somebody who I don't know if I've ever named Clone Queen before. I was underestimating her. And she's still vibrant and she's still evil and still wonderfully delicious. I gotta say, Rachel. The whole thing with how she's just got this act on of being so helpless and such. She's not helpless. That brain is still going. And she, I think if we put her and Delphine in a room together, I don't know that Delphine would come out alive.
Yeah.
So I've got to say Rachel.
Nice.
She just really surprised me by the end of this episode. Crystal, honorable mention. She's a princess. She gets to be a princess. But I got to say Rachel.
Nice. Nice choice. I'm looking forward to seeing more of Rachel. That's for sure.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of both of them. Like I said, I don't want anything to happen to Crystal. Do not kill Crystal. Save Crystal.
Hashtag save Crystal.
Save the clone. Save the world. Oh, wait. Sorry.
That's not Heroes there.
Okay.
Show.
Let's go to backup.
I just need you to be my backup, okay?
I don't do backup. I don't even know what backup is.
Here is where when I really struggled. Because I thought about giving backup to Delphine. because even though in the end her scheming failed, she still gave as good as she got. But then I realized that no, because my mind was saying Delphine, but my heart was saying Donnie.
Oh.
I know. I don't think Donnie ever got a backup. Or maybe once when he killed Leaky. But
I think he did once last year, but I'd have to look. But
yeah.
That would be his first time this season.
It would be, and that's who I decided to go with, because I have enormous amounts of respect for Donnie. And he's not a character that I would respect, usually, you know. But honestly, everything he does, even though he does this in this comedic Donnie way, but he's a strong character. It's just that his strength doesn't lie where you usually would think a strong character should, you know. Strong characters don't look like Donnie, and yet Donnie is, without a doubt, a strong character. And he impressed me in how he stands up for what he believes in, what he wants, even though he fails. But it's such a human thing to do that I couldn't help myself. I had to give it to Donnie.
He is strong like a baby ox.
Yes, exactly.
That's an interesting choice.
I know.
I have to say,
myself.
I love him. But he wasn't on my radar for this episode. My runner-up on this would be Fee because of that whole thing with him and Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that scene.
Yeah.
I loved his heart reaching out to it. But when I, like you were saying, your head and your heart and all this, kind of backwards for me. My heart was saying Fee, but my head was going, there's someone that deserves it a little bit more for me this episode. That's Scott.
Oh.
I like how Scott kind of stood up there. He helped get this plan together. He runner up, like an honorable mention to the battle bitches there from the gaming, how all of this comes together and he's got this planned in a total geeky way of how to get it out there. I'm guessing he had something to do with the first copy. He should have had a little bit more to have a second copy, or at least a digital copy of this. But he's stepping up. I'm seeing how he's really going to play into this whole end game with the biology of the clones. Then you top it off by the fact that here's a man who's not only a geek. I mean, look at his apartment with everything. He had a Doctor Who poster, Capaldi, by the way. So he's up to date on his who-ness. he's got a kitty, and he was worried about his kitty. So real men love cats. And that just put it over the top for me. So Scott, you are my backup for the week.
Nice. Okay. Well, we are all over the place this week.
I think you and I both picked people that we were surprised about.
I know, yeah.
We'd love to know who your clone queen and backup are, so do let us know on Twitter, email, or the hotline. All of that's at the beginning of the show. And don't forget to go over and check out all the fun on scififorme.com. Next week, we will be back for the penultimate episode of this season. That does not seem right. It feels like it just started.
I know. And it's been 8 weeks now.
And this is the second podcast in a row that I've barely made it through if it wasn't for the help of coffee. I'm going to need even more help because next week we're going to have a little bit of jet lag as I head on over to London town.
Nice.
And I think we're going to start doing some theorizing, too, about season 3 coming up. So
get four.
Those brains a-thinking and start throwing out your season 4. Yeah, sorry, that's right. I was looking at iZombie on here, so I think I'm being thrown off by my seasons here. So we want to hear some theorizing about what you think might be happening in season 4 and what they're setting up and what we're maybe missing and clues from these last episodes that maybe we need to pay a little bit more attention to. And when we're going to see Cal again.
Cal me, and Jesse.
My hottie. Jesse, we already know. That's going to be season 4.
I know.
We know. Still. Quotes. Quotes. I don't know. Are we going to see Cal before the end of the season? Is he going to, Cal and Kara, are they going to come back?
I hope so. I hope so. It would be a nice wrap-up.
Iceland is on the way to the UK, in a way. Maybe they'll stop and pick them up.
Maybe. Because that makes sense.
Why not? It could be fun. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Orphan Black. We will see you next week. Don't forget to check out our iZombie podcast as well. We will be talking about the season finale next week. I just can't handle this. We're going to have one finale and then another one and then nothing. Nothing. Nada. Zip. Zero. Zilch.
You can do it. You can handle it. We'll find something.
We'll figure out something. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is a fight for knowledge. This is war.
Arias tenarshbi.
Those with power do not give it up easily.
They never have.
And they never will.
I am not your weapon.
I am not your toy. I am not your experiment.
I'm not your property.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFi For Me Radio.